Hello and welcome to Science Unscripted. Gabe here, without Connor, but with Yulia Bergin. Yes.
Hello.
Thank you for joining me,
Yulia. Thanks for having me.
First show of the new year. Connor is off this week, but we'll be back the week following. And most of the emails that you guys have sent in refer specifically to him, so we won't read any, but I will say thank you at this point for all the advice that people have been sending to me about my hernia, including recommendations for specific hospitals that I should visit.
In Canada?
If I had a private jet, yeah, maybe I would go and consult a Canadian physician with regard to my hernia. But
how's the pain, by the way?
It's still there.
But getting,
I gauge it. I'm an avid golfer, even though I haven't played golf. I haven't hit a golf ball in 5 years. Mm-hmm. I gauge it by swinging, taking a practice swing where you don't hit the ball at all. You just swing into the air and imagine that you're Tiger Woods.
Saw you doing that.
Yeah, I do that all the time. Mm. And it still hurts on the follow through. Mm-hmm. Right, the backswing's no problem. But on the follow through, when you turn your body, I can feel that mesh, whatever that thing that they've put to cover the hole in my hernia. It just doesn't feel right. But thank you for all your advice out there, people who have been writing in. A couple of weeks back, we had Matt in here, and he spoke about bird flu. And I think at this point, we should address the topic of bird flu with this being a science show, because it seems like it's a topic that is doing well.
We talked about it in the morning meeting that we had today, and our data analyst, he said, apparently people are actively looking for bird flu updates on YouTube.
Okay.
And so we thought, yeah, maybe we should pick up the topic again.
Yeah. Matt spoke at length about bird flu in the episode that he did, so we won't do that here. But one important update, or one development that has happened, I think absolutely should be addressed, and it concerns the spread of bird flu between human beings, because primarily at this point, obviously, it's a virus that affects birds, other animals, a lot of cattle in all around the United States, mostly in California at this point. But it can infect some human beings. At this point, there are around 65 people in the United States, some in Canada, that have contracted the virus. And the development that we wanted to talk about here today briefly was the spread between human beings, because at this point, there is no evidence of that. But a couple of patients who have had it, one in Louisiana and one in British Columbia, have been analyzed, and there is a mutation that they found in that virus, which means it might be able to spread or be spread between human beings.
I mean, that's the big concern, right? That this could happen. And the longer the virus circulates, the higher the chances are that it might mutate in a way that a person-to-person spread gets more likely. But it's important to stress, I think, again, that no person-to-person spread has been detected so far.
Yeah.
But what a study done in a lab found in, I think it was early December, so a few weeks back, was that just a single amino acid switch in the receptor binding protein of the virus would be enough to make it more adaptable to human cell, basically.
Yeah.
That's a very simple explanation, I think.
The way I understand it is that the receptor in birds, it's called the 2.3 receptor. We have those, but we don't have them in our upper respiratory tract as much. We have them more deep in the lungs and also in our eyes. Our receptors are called 2.6, A2.6 receptors. And you're talking about the difference between A2.3 and A2.6, and that is not as big of a difference as I've thought that it is.
One amino acid switch. Another switch could make it even more adaptable to these human receptors, human cell receptors. But this study was done in a lab. So no conclusion can be drawn from that when it comes to how does this virus develop in a living organism. Mm-hmm. But still, what they found when they examined the virus, the teenager in Canada caught, was a similar switch, a similar mutation took place and caused this severe illness, this teenager.
So what you're saying is in the real world, they're seeing the changes that they found in the lab in the study in December.
Or similar
ones.
And
that's why virologists and epidemiologists around the world
are
more worried, more concerned.
Sure, they are concerned. It still it doesn't say anything about human-to-human transmission yet. Mm-hmm. But the big concern, first of all, is if this virus adapts more to the human body, right, the human cells, the likelihood increases that it might, in the end, eventually spread between humans.
Yeah.
And there was also something Matt talked to Megan Davis about in the episode 2 weeks ago, I think it was.
Okay. And Megan Davis was a researcher looking at this particular strain of virus?
Yeah, she is an associate professor of environmental health and engineering. And she talked to him about how raw milk, for example, is... I mean, of course, if you work with cattle and work with poultry or wild birds, that's then you are at risk of contracting the virus.
Okay.
But drinking raw milk or eating raw milk products is still the way to get infected as a human. And if you have pets, a cat, a dog, for example, but cats are more likely to drink raw milk, don't give it to them. Avoid it.
Yeah. And if you get bird flu, one thing to say here is that it's very similar to the normal strains of flu that human beings can get. The one difference would be if a fever persists for more than 4 days, absolutely consult a doctor. Shortness of breath. If you have trouble breathing, contact emergency services immediately. And at this point, we'll absolutely keep our eyes on the story because bird flu is more lethal than normal flu, than the coronavirus, than COVID was. So we are going to keep our eyes on this. And we're going to move to also another deadly thing in our next topic, smoking.
Mm.
Study out of Great Britain, the University College London, published in the Journal of Addiction, says that smoking a single cigarette will take, on average, 20 minutes off your life. Which is almost
22 for women, right?
Hold and on. 17. We'll get to that.
Okay.
20 on average, 20 minutes off your life. That's almost twice as bad as we thought before. They've done analyses like this, looking at large population studies and the effects of smoking on life longevity. 20 minutes for a cigarette. I know you're a smoker.
Mm. Yeah.
Our listeners.
You too.
Yeah. Well, our listeners know that I'm a smoker. Maybe we should stop. Because that's one of the important things I thought in this study. They looked at the British doctor's study. This has been going since 1951, tracking 34,000 males and 6,000 females. But they also looked at the Million Women study, which tracks all aspects of female health in Great Britain. What they found for men, 17 minutes per cigarette, 22 minutes
for women.
For women.
Yeah.
You smoke cigarettes all the time. 22 minutes.
All the time.
Well, since hearing about the study, does that go into your mind, 22
yeah.
minutes?
Yeah, sure it is. I only heard about it this morning, so it was a stressful morning. I haven't thought about it too much. Mm.
It came to the conclusion that there is no safe level of smoking. So somebody who smokes one cigarette a day, like my wife, Adrienne, one cigarette a day.
That's amazing.
She's got the discipline of an East German woman.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that right now. One cigarette compared to 20 cigarettes, 50% lower risk of heart disease and stroke. Between those two people. So even if you're having just the one cigarette, it's worth quitting.
Mm.
If you quit, quit for real. How do we quit? That's where you come in, Julia.
Oh.
You wrote an article on New Year's resolutions, right?
Yeah. There are five things that are important if you want to make a change. One thing at a time is the first important thing. So if you want to quit smoking, start exercising, lose weight, that's maybe too much.
So only one.
Don't take on too many things. I mean, maybe you have enough willpower.
There's a tip. There's a tip right there. Only one.
Yeah, only one.
Okay, I want to stop smoking. Let's go.
Okay.
Next.
Yeah, but let me explain why that is important. We have a certain amount of willpower, and to change things, willpower is needed. If you try to change too many, you're running out of willpower and you don't change anything in
okay,
the end.
Got it. I'm going to use all my willpower to stop smoking. Number two.
And now it's important that you want to stop smoking and not that you feel like you have to.
I don't want to take 20 minutes off my, or 17
okay,
minutes
maybe
off my
that's
life.
Enough
every.
For
I don't
you.
Want that anymore.
Yeah, good.
Okay,
good.
Number three, let's go.
yeah, stay realistic. So that is, I don't know how to apply that to smoking because you either quit or you don't, right? I don't know many people who can go from 20 cigarettes to just one per day? I mean, as you just said, it makes a difference, but still.
I've done cold turkey before numerous times.
Yeah.
It worked for a
Me
while.
Me too. Yeah, it works for a while and then you're back to normal. But stay realistic is a good thing when you, for example, want to exercise more. So if you haven't exercised at all for a long time and then you say, okay, now I want to go jogging every day, that's probably setting the bar way too high. Mm-hmm. So
once a week
or twice a week, whatever it is.
And not a marathon right away, just a 10-minute jog? And is that enough?
Yeah. It all depends on where you're coming from, right? If you are a relatively athletic person, 10 minutes of jogging is maybe a little weak.
All right. Number four.
Proclaim the resolution out loud. So tell people about it. Tell people that you quit smoking.
That I want to quit smoking. I'm going to quit smoking.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
who should
promise,
I tell?
Yeah.
For everyone,
example,
social media, the whole world.
Maybe.
Tell it on a mountain or just tell you?
Tell me.
Or our listeners right now?
Tell your wife. Tell your listeners. Yeah. Exactly. Because that strengthens the commitment.
All right.
And the last thing is setbacks are normal. So maybe it works well for a few months and then you feel stressed and you smoke a cigarette. And instead of then saying, I don't know, I throw it all out the window, say, okay, I start again tomorrow. Mm. And I start again with not smoking.
Right.
Because, yeah, it's normal. It's normal. You will have setbacks like you always have in life.
Only one resolution. You have to want it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that one.
Mm-hmm. Stay realistic.
Stay realistic.
Set realistic goals. Tell it out loud and be aware that setbacks are normal.
Okay. You have a chance here to tell all our listeners what your resolution is, Yulia. What is it?
I don't really have one, but I want to get back into my training habits that I had in last year.
You have to be one of the most athletic women I know. You've fallen out of them?
I mean, yeah, because I got a dog 3 months back and I now spent my whole free time walking this dog, which is kind of training as well. But I did strength training before that. So I really miss that. I miss that. So I want to get back to that. And I'm now back at 2 times per week. So it was at 4 times per week.
Okay.
I would love to get back there.
All right. Well, stay realistic, will you?
Yeah, yeah.
For me and for for everyone else.
What is yours?
I'm going to quit smoking. I'm going to quit. Yeah.
When?
I think so.
You think so?
At some point. I'll let you know. I'll let you know and I'll let everyone else know. What about our listeners? What do you guys want to change? What would it be? Write to us. This is the kind of stuff that Connor and I absolutely love. And he will be back next week. For the rest of the program this week, we're going to hear an interview that we did last year. And last week, I asked you guys which moment you enjoyed the most from the look back to 2024. And weirdly enough, it was the study conducted by Jennifer Haza on creativity and drugs. Do illicit drugs, LSD, from LSD to alcohol to other psychoactive substances, do they have an effect on creativity? And what is it? That was done by Jennifer Haza right here in Berlin, Germany. And as always, guys, write to us, su@dw.com. Connor will be back next week, and this roller coaster will just keep on going.
You all probably have an image of someone in mind who is very, very creative. And I think it may possibly include alcohol use or drug use or other substance use or abuse, because, right, that's what we all think. If you're really going to be a true artist,
the drunk writer, the singer who's on LSD or mescaline or DMT or one of those psychoactive substances that somehow makes that artist creative.
Well, my home where I grew up, Kurt Cobain, that was part of the mythology of him, right? Was the drug addiction.
Garcia, the acid trips that opened his mind to all these new and crazy ideas.
Right? It's all coming, or it's connected to the drug use. Well, some new research out of Germany, or a meta-analysis, is going to tell all of us that that is completely wrong.
Science Unscripted.
So my name is Jennifer. I'm a psychologist and I work as a researcher at the Humboldt University and the Weizmann Institute in Berlin. And I focus on creativity. And recently I published a study on the enhancement methods of creativity.
So Jennifer, I think most of our fans out there would love to be more creative. Wait, what is the conclusion of your research? How do we all do that?
So the conclusion of our study is that there are many, many, many different ways on how to enhance your personal creative output. And traditionally, it was focused on training, so really learning methods. That is one way, but we also found many different manipulations.
Can I manipulate or enhance my creativity by taking drugs?
You can certainly try. But our research shows that we found overall zero effects of drug intake. So first to the papers that we looked at. So they give participants actual drugs, usually just components of drugs and in very, very low doses and of course maximum controlled settings. And in those studies, they could show that for some participants, it worked a little bit on their creative performance. But even for others, it just worsened the performance. So overall, we find zero effects.
Yeah, before we go too much further, maybe a definition of what creativity actually is. What does it mean if I'm a creative person, or if Condog here is a creative person? What does that mean?
So measuring creativity is always about at least both aspects of the definition, which is new and usefulness. So we do measure how original the thought is, which is usually kind of like quantified dependent on all the answers of the set that we collect in the study. But then there's also this more or less subjective evaluation of how useful this idea is, because what we don't want is kind of this just randomness in ideas, right? So we need both. But both aspects are kind of subjective, yes.
It's kind of a weird question. Is it important to be creative? Is it something we have to strive for? Should the people out there who feel less creative than others feel negatively about that fact? Why?
Yeah, there's certainly pressure on parents to make their kids creative.
To view them that way.
Yeah.
Is it important?
I think it's a beautiful question, because we always take it for granted, right? Everyone wants to be creative. All the work environment wants us to be creative. I think what matters is why you want to be creative. You can be creative for the sake of the outcome, of the result. This is usually what we want at work. We want the good ideas, right? The awesome output, great innovations. But I think where it is actually important for us is for the process. With this kind of perspective, everyone is creative or can be creative, even if you're knitting or cooking or engaging in some form of reading and you fantasize a lot. These are all very much creative processes. And the important part is we enjoy them. So I would always argue, yes, go for being creative, feeling creative, do it, but not necessarily for the sake of the outcome.
Because one of the bad reasons or one of the reasons why you maybe wouldn't want to be creative is to be celebrated by fans for your creativity. Like if I enjoyed my creativity only because it makes others happy, is that necessarily a bad thing? Or if you're thinking about the way that your creativity is already going to be received in the moment you're creating, is that not a good thing?
It's not necessarily, actually. Because being motivated to gain fame can be an intrinsic motivation in itself. I think what is important is to understand that, and I think this comes down for parents, or is important for parents, if you have someone, if you are yourself intrinsically motivated, because you want to enjoy the process, you want to solve a riddle or whatever, Then it's very important to not, on top of that, give some form of external reward, because usually that crushes our internal motivation. And then we start to do it just for the reward and not for the process again, anymore.
Let's just assume that creativity is what we all want. We want to be more creative. How do we do that based on the extant research out there? How do we all become more creative at the individual level?
So the good thing is that there are many, many ways. One way is to start little and to learn that you can do it. Simple as that. Because the more positive kind of feedback we get, the more competent we feel, the more motivated we are to engage in a field. So this is one way. It's called the self-efficacy path, so to speak. The other thing is more maybe for the rational types, learn methods. Like, you know about the brainstorming methods, their brain writings, all sorts of different methods. The internet is full of them, which can help in certain contexts to feel like, okay, you get a way on how to think more broadly, more diverse. That's one way. But I think, or if you find something that you enjoy, maybe you start with crafting because you need to fix something. But if you like it, you start to think about it more, and then you engage in maybe more problem solving associated to this craft. And then once in a while, you are a craftsman, right? And you identify your personality with that, and that makes you more engaged in this field. So this is another, I think, very indirect path about liking something.
Okay, for anyone who just listened to that answer and said, that's too laborious for me, I want an easy way out. I want a quick fix on how to become creative. Is there one? If drugs don't work that well, is there a way to make myself creative just at the snap of a finger?
No. The short answer I would say is no. But I would maybe as an offer, I would give you the most indirect and still most powerful tool. And that is meditation, actually. Because in meditation, we learn something. We learn to not think, which is a very unintuitive thing for our nowadays. Usually we tend to like to think and we like to rationalize everything. But with meditation, we learn the opposite. We learn to not think. And this is the most powerful tool you can have when you want to ideate in other parts of your everyday life.
Do we lose creativity as we age? Because I feel like if you give a kid, I don't know, a paperclip, they're going to come up with probably wilder ideas for that paperclip than I would. Is that, that's my feeling. Does the research show that?
Yeah. Yeah. So the first point in time in life when we lose, so to speak, creativity, we do not really lose it. We just don't engage in it anymore, is when we start school. And what happens with children when they start school is that they find themselves in a system that always restricts them to certain criteria, right? Because they are graded.
But doesn't that system help kids learn what is useful? Because you said that the second part of creativity...
But not what is new.
Okay, yeah, so it kind of kills the newness of the ideas, but it at least helps them understand what's useful?
Exactly. So even if you look at the creative process, it's not just about generating ideas, right? It's also about integrating it into a system of our world, basically. So you need to know stuff. You need to elaborate on your thoughts. And this is all what we learn in school and what we excel at, right? Our rational thinking. But what is so crucial to find very astonishingly, seemingly creative, like super creative ideas, is that that you find association between concepts which are very far away. And for that, it seems like we need this non-thinking process. And that's nothing we learn at school. This is nothing we even talk about in society as much. And I think meditation is really one tool which tries to incorporate it in our language and our being.
Jennifer, you mentioned you have an 8-year-old child. And so my question for you is, how do you go about fostering creativity, knowing everything about the literature that you do, without putting pressure on that same child to quote unquote be creative? How what's like the most fun way to do it to make them enjoy that process or to you know what I mean?
I think there are 3 points that I try. So first off, whenever my child is interested in something, so intrinsically interested in something, I will never disturb that, and I will kind of throw all the material on her to researcher her interest. The second thing is that I make sure that she is often bored and has no schedule. Super important. So she has to figure out on herself what to do. Again, this is intrinsic motivation. And the third thing, I really try to push this notion that school as a system with all its evaluations is really not important.
That was Jennifer Haase speaking to us from Potsdam, Germany, which is just to the southwest of the capital, Berlin. If that helps.
It's beautiful. Lots of
very clean place with palaces and and stuff like that.
But not much of a nightlife, she was saying.
They tried to convert one of those palaces to a disco, and it's nice for students, I guess.
Yeah.
Good place to feel creative if the music is right.
Yeah, so creativity, a lot there. The drugs don't work, generally speaking.
They can enhance your feeling of creativity and maybe open your mind to new things, but not really.
If you're looking for useful ideas, you're going to probably wake up the next morning and be like, well, that was stupid. That doesn't seem as good of an idea today as it did last night at 2 a.m. Mm-hmm. So what does work, just to kind of rehash that? Jennifer was saying start little. So do a small task. If you're really trying to train creativity, start small. Don't sit down and think you're going to do something for an hour or 2 hours. There are methods. You can find them online, brainstorming or brain writing, she referenced. But the one I liked most was find something you enjoy. So if you've got a hobby.
Intrinsic motivation.
Yeah. Any hobby, anything that you like to do. She was talking about kind of craftsmanship or handcrafting. Whether it's crocheting or woodwork or tile work or anything, the odds are that you're going to start practical to fix something or build something and end up becoming more creative as a result. I like that.
There was a quick fix. Don't forget that, Connor. Meditation. Turn your brain off or try to not think.
Yeah. Similar to boredom. It's different than boredom, but a lot forcing yourself.
That could be the cognitive space that you have to be in order to enter that place where you're not thinking or to meditate. That works.
Yeah,
but psychoactive substances not necessarily.
And if you still doubt Jennifer, or that field of research, if you're gonna still use those psychoactive agents to quote unquote enhance your creativity, my suggestion would be to. Take some notes. If you think you're being more creative, take some notes down. See what you can come up with.
When you're in that flow, when you're in that moment.
Yeah, and then
when you're under the influence of that psychoactive substance, jot your ideas down or record them with these phones that people have these days.
Yeah, and then wake up the next day, take a look at them or listen to them and see if they meet her definition of what creativity actually is. Novel and useful.
And most importantly, send us that recording.
Oh, if you've got
please.
Wait, are you like drunken?
If you've got a recording where you're pretty faithful or where you're pretty certain that is creative, send it to us. We not only will listen to it or watch it or whatever, we're gonna let all our listeners listen to it.
I was gonna say we will be the judge, but our listeners will be the ultimate judge. Yeah. You will be sending that to su@dw.com. In the meantime, we wish you lots of creativity and fewer psychoactive substances.
Science Unscripted.
DW, made for minds.